that's right. I have the one and only representative, Congressman Mick Mulvaney, on the air. Before we start, I have a little something to play, and I hope he gets my drift on this. So hold on just a second, Mick. Here it comes. Coming up right now for you, a little Snow White, lest you remember this.
No trick to get rich quick.
If you dig, dig, dig with a shovel or a pick.
In a mine, in a mine, in a mine, in a mine,
where a million diamonds shine.
Well, I don't think we have diamonds in South Carolina, although a few have been found. But Congressman Mick Mulvaney, you were in Kershaw yesterday, and I understand they're thinking about trying to open up the Hale Mine.
Good. Okay. Good. It took me a while. It took me a while to make the connection. Thank you, Ed. I would not have guessed that one. I was actually in Kershaw yesterday, but not for the gold mine. I was there touring the Archer Daniels Midland soybean facility.
Okay.
It's probably the last piece of major industry that's left in Kershaw in southern Lancaster County. Had a tour of the facility there. Met some of the folks who worked there. Saw what they did. And then stayed for lunch at Cromer's in Kershaw, which is one of the famous southern home cooking places in Lancaster County. So I did have a good time. I know a little bit about the mine, but we were not there yesterday for that.
Well, darn. I was hoping you were, because I was just reading that the Toronto-based company wants to put $1 billion over 15 years to restart the Hale Mine.
Yeah, and they've been trying to do it for about, I think it's 5 or 6 years now. The short story is this, if a politician can give a short story, let's put that one to the test. There was a gold mine there, obviously going all the way back to the 19th century. I cannot remember when it discontinued, but it discontinued, let's say, a generation or two ago. Because of new technology and because of the dramatically higher price of gold, this Canadian company, Ramarco Minerals, thinks that it is going to be profitable to reopen the mine, which is a really, really big deal. For South Carolina. In addition to that, not only do they want to open the mine, but they want to open an assay, A-S-S-A-Y, an assay lab to do all of the testing. It would be the first major assay lab open on the East Coast in a very, very long time, and has the potential to make South Carolina the center of any new gold rush on the East Coast. And with gold prices looking to stay well above $1,000, there's a very good chance that the East Coast mines could open back up. So it's a good opportunity for us. There's obviously a lot of environmental challenges anytime you want to open up I think it's a 4,000-acre facility, but that's what they've been working through with the state of South Carolina and the EPA for several years. So, again, I do not know where it stands. That's the short version of the story. How'd I do with that?
Yeah, not bad. It says that the Army Corps of Engineering is going to be taking public comments on a draft environmental impact statement and will hold public hearings in April, Mick. So that looks like it's moving forward.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously a lot of people who live near there are concerned with the impact on the environment, and rightly so. So the question is whether or not we can figure out a way to balance the economic interest of opening the mine with the environmental interest. I think that they can. It's a company that has shown it can do that in the past. And let's not beat around the bush. Kershaw County and southern Lancaster County, where Kershaw is located. Kershaw, believe it or not, is in Lancaster County, not in Kershaw County. It moved back in the 1960s. Is not exactly a booming place. And we would love to have not only jobs down there, but the chance for real economic development, a chance to put Kershaw County and southern Lancaster County on the map when it comes to a modern-day gold rush. How neat would that be? So I wish them the best of luck in moving forward.
Absolutely. I'm sure they'll be contacting you if they need some help with EPA and all these things going on up there in Washington.
Yeah, we have talked to them on and off. They've actually worked more closely with Senator Graham's office because of his relationship with the Army Corps of Engineers. But, yes, because it's in my district, we've been directly involved with at least meeting with them several times over the course of the last 3 years.
So that's pretty cool, being seeing how I have a jewelry store and I'm in the gold business, too. That's always interesting to us. Next thing I wanted to talk about was I saw a clip of you for March 31st. You want it to be National Lineman Appreciation Day. Did you get that through?
Not yet.
Not yet?
But we're cautiously optimistic. We got a couple of weeks to do it, which is good. There's obviously not much objection to it. It's one of those symbolic things, but symbolism is important. And what we're trying to do is simply draw attention to the work that goes on every single year, but especially went on this year with the major storms that we've had in the Southeast, and all the folks who work to make sure the lights come on. So, like I said, is it going to change the destiny of the country? No. Is it a nice gesture to folks who deserve a nice gesture every now and then? Yes, it is.
Sure. So one of the other things, of course, they've just filed this lawsuit against the Department of Energy on the project over there, the MOX project at the Savannah River site. How can we not continue things that were started, Mick?
Well, the easy answer to that is the government discontinues things that it starts all the time. So that's not the right question. The right question is, does the government have the right to discontinue this? Has it entered into certain agreements, whether they are explicit or implicit with the state of South Carolina? And if so, have they violated those agreements, or are they indicating that they intend to violate those agreements? We talked with Alan Wilson's office before this in a general sense. I have not read the specific allegations of the lawsuit that he has filed against the federal government. I know Alan very well, and I know Alan to be a well-reasoned and rational thinking guy. So if he thinks he has the basis for a lawsuit, then I back him on that. So we'll wait and see what happens. Again, I do not know the specifics of the lawsuit.
Well, you said that the government keeps changing, and of course in the executive office we keep seeing changes coming out all the time. I know that you wanted you were part of the Enforce Act, weren't you?
Yeah, Trade's Enforce Act passed the House, I think late last week.
And so where do you think this is going to go? Is it going to go to the Senate? I mean, if it does, it's not going to come up. It should go to the Senate, but it's not going to come up, is it?
Yeah, very simply, the answer is yes, it went to the Senate, because that's what happens when we pass bills out of the House, and then it will go nowhere after that. The Senate will not vote on it, and if they did, they would vote it down. That's the difficulty that we face in dealing with a president who isn't playing by the same rules that every other president has followed. And there are no tools available to us right now that seem to work. You could defund something, but that doesn't seem to work very well. We wouldn't have Democrat support to do that. At the other end of the spectrum, you could impeach. But that wouldn't go very well either. In fact, it raises a very good question as to whether or not these types of executive orders rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors. So right now, Congress doesn't seem to have any tools to deal with a president who is willing to sort of ignore let's not say the law, but let's say the traditions of the office. It's very, very rare in our country that we have constitutional crises. Last time that I can remember was when Richard Nixon was ordered to turn over his tapes. So we're struggling with how to deal with it. And the reason, and I know folks are listening to that and they're completely unsatisfied and they want us to storm the ramparts and set buildings on fire with pitchforks and stuff like that. But we had dinner. I wasn't there, but Trey was. Trey Gowdy, I'm talking about. Had dinner the other night with Judge Anthony Scalia. Pretty smart guy.
Right.
A lot smarter than me. He might even be smarter than Trey, although there's probably some question as to that. And he said he didn't know what to do either. So it's not that there isn't the political desire to do something. It's just that we live in a constitutional systems, and you don't get to just make step up as you go along, at least not if you're going to follow the Constitution. So we're trying to figure out a way to deal with this within the bounds of the constitutional authority that the House has.
What about the STOP Act and what Tom Rice was trying to do?
Yeah, I'd like Tom's bill, and frankly, Trey's one of my best friends. I wish we could have done both the Enforce Act and the STOP Act. Just because the STOP Act was unique, and I got to give Tom credit for this, in that it was a resolution, a House resolution, and not a bill.
Right.
And the reason he did that was resolutions don't need the approval of the Senate. So in that sense, it was one of those things that might have allowed us to do something. I don't know why we didn't take it up, but clearly the powers that be, Mr. Cantor, who set the rules, Mr. Boehner, who runs the House, decided they wanted the Enforce Act instead of the Stop Act.
I think that's a shame, too, because, like you said, it was a resolution. It could have done something. Now, moving on to your bill, which is the term limits bill. How's that one doing?
You know, not as good as you hope. I mean, face it, how many politicians do you know are actually willing to say that they want to give up their job? It's not very many. But we got a good bit of attention on it. We got some good press coverage on it, which we were looking for to try and drive the debate. Things like this don't happen overnight, but I can tell you they don't happen at all if no one is talking about them. That's one of the reasons we introduced the bill when we did, and we did it right on the heels of the government shutdown when disapproval of Congress was at an all-time high, and I can go to my colleagues and say, wow, wouldn't this be a great idea to take up an issue that an overwhelming majority of the country supports? In fact, more people support term limits now than ever before. What a great time to talk about this. I got a couple people to agree to that, so we're trying to build a little momentum. I don't know how many co-sponsors we have on the bill right now, but we knew it wouldn't pass when we introduced it, or at least it wouldn't pass in this Congress, but we'll do it now and try and drive the debate, do it again in the next Congress, try and do a debate, and then after I'm gone, hope that someone else will continue to drive the debate. So it's the right thing to do. And just because it isn't going to be easy and isn't going to be quick doesn't mean we shouldn't try and do it.
Sure. I like the, I saw a tweet that you had put out about, what did you say, if you could balance the budget on the first day?
Yeah, no, I said that from, I think, the first week I was in Congress.
Right.
I could pass a balanced budget amendment on Monday and a term limits bill on Tuesday. I quit on Wednesday and go home because if you were able to do those two things, the government, the system of government that we have that is so badly broken in terms of its spending and its dysfunction would start to heal itself automatically. Those are structural changes that you could make that would, over the course of time, fix Congress and fix our government and balance the budget. But so far we're 0-2, so it doesn't look like I get to quit today.
And I presume you're going to run again.
Yeah, in fact, they filed yesterday.
Did you?
I forgot all about that. Thank you for mentioning that. I'm going to run again, and so is Trey, and so is Jeff. So we're managed to keep the team together, which is good. Obviously, Tim is running as well. So the four, some people call it the four horsemen. I've never understood that. It's got an apocalyptic sort of feel to it. It bothers me a little bit. But the four of us who went in together, who are good friends, are all going to try and stay together for at least another 2 years. Now, after that, I think you'll start seeing us peel off. I've already had to beg Trey to run again this time, and I told people when I went in that I wasn't going to stay forever. If I win this next election, that will have been 6 years that I've been in Congress, and you shouldn't stay forever. I believe in that term limits bill that I offered. The term limits bill, by the way, was 12 and 12. I originally offered it as 8 years in the House and 12 years in the Senate, and some of my House friends said that diminishes the value of the House, so it's a compromise in order to get their support. We set that term limit bill as 12 in the House and 12 in the Senate. That's plenty. That's plenty. I don't ever expect to stay that long, and I know the Trey doesn't either. So for right now, all four of us are running again and would appreciate everybody's support. It's a good group and a good team, and I think we're doing a good job for South Carolina.
Well, I think you certainly are, too, as a group. I mean, I don't know about other states, but I tell you what, you four are always in the news in some aspect, and I think it's pretty awesome that a small state like South Carolina gets as much notice as we do.
Well, it's because we work as a team, and you say you don't know much about other states. I do, just because I work with these other states and the other delegations. And I can assure you there are no delegations that are as tight as we are. It's not just because we're most of us in the same party, because we work, believe it or not, with Mr. Clyburn on a regular basis on things that are important for back home. So, no, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just a function of being from a small state. It can't be just that, because there's other small states. I think some of it has to do with the fact that we were friends before. You know, Jeff and Tim and I were all in the state legislature for a short time, and we had that relationship. But I think it's more just unique and just something that you can't replicate. And Tom Rice has come in and been a good part of the group. Mark Sanford, believe it or not, you know, love him, hate him. I didn't support him when he ran. He knows that. I know that. But Mark Sanford has done a really good job in Congress since he's come back about a year ago. So we've just been very blessed with a good group of public servants here. And the long, you know, if we can keep it together another couple of years, that'd be great. It's not going to last forever. The question is, are there folks ready to step up and fill that same role when Trey wants to leave, or I want to leave, or Mark wants to move on? So we still need to continue to move young people into the political environment to try and find the next group of leaders.
Well, you know, you bring up a very interesting point for the Republicans. How do you bring young people into the party? Of course, you know, there's all kinds of discussions going on about the viability of the Republican Party. What do you see, Mick?
I've actually had a good bit of luck reaching out to the younger people. What we have to do is focus on the things that we share instead of focusing on the things that divide us. I'll use let me talk about it at the national level, because it doesn't really apply as heavily to South Carolina. But nationally, if you wanted to paint with a very broad brush, the younger fiscal conservatives, and there's a lot of those, are also probably socially a little bit more liberal, or socially a little bit more libertarian is probably the right word. Mm-hmm. They don't want the government involved in their lives. What does this mean to them? You know, so often we turn immediately to things about life issues, but it's not just that. It's also security issues, privacy issues, government intervention overseas issues. And while it's unlikely that this modern youthful conservative will be in lockstep with, say, the Christian right wing of the party, it's very possible that there could be an 80 or 90% overlap. I can live with that, and I think so can they. I can live with a younger group of Republicans coming in who are interested in balancing the budget, interested in keeping us unentangled in needless overseas endeavors. I can live with that if they come to the table and want to have that discussion. So I do think there's a chance for the Republican Party to reach out to younger people who are starting to see it. Rand Paul, for example, would be the standard bearer for that wing of the party.
Sure.
And I have been to several Paul events, and the crowd is much, much younger than it was, say, when I traveled with Rick Perry last year. So clearly we're having some successes. The real question is, will we be tolerant of folks who don't agree with us 100% of the time?
Sure. That's with anything. Now, you brought up an interesting point about the young people. And yesterday, I think it was, Vice President Joe Biden was in Poland and in Europe. He's going to be assuring our NATO countries that we would defend them against Russia. Joe is over there doing this. What do you think? Is this the right move?
Well, certainly anytime you can have meetings with your allies and let them know that they're still their allies, I can't see any harm that would come from that. I don't think that the administration has mishandled the current situation. I think the difficulty with the current situation is what the administration has done for the previous 5 years. Anytime you project weakness, as we have done for the last 5 years, it encourages people to do things that you want them to do.
Sure.
And we have been projecting weakness for a very, very long time, and I think that encourages people to be a little bit more aggressive, which is what you're seeing with Russia in the Crimea right now. So, no, I have no difficulty with the vice president going over and saying, look, NATO is still relevant and we are going to defend you. That's the right thing to do, and it's the truth.
Sure.
The difficulty is not that. The difficulty is what we've been doing for the last 5 years, to let the Russians think that they can get away with this, and it looks like they can get away with this.
Well, what happens when the next country is invaded, Mick?
Yeah, no, that's the worry. I mean, listen, it's more than just Europe. If you look around the world, who are the most frightened people by what's happening in Crimea other than the Ukrainians and the Crimeans? My guess is it's the Taiwanese, okay? That if Russia can annex a former state. You know, it has a lot of its native-speaking peoples in it.
Mm-hmm.
That formula applies in many ways to the Chinese position towards Taiwan. They see it as a breakaway republic, not an independent nation. In fact, a lot of people don't realize this. We don't even recognize Taiwan as an independent nation. We have defense treaties with them, but there's only, I think, 14 countries in the whole world that recognize Taiwan as a nation. So, yeah, it has precedential value. People, other countries can look at what Russia is doing and say, well, Russia annexed the Crimea and nobody really did anything, so it must be okay to do that again in the 21st century. That's the danger here, and that's why I think that taking firm action against the Russians probably is a pretty good idea. I support the president's actions in the economic sanctions.
But were they
honestly,
enough?
I think they're probably a little weak.
Okay. But
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's what I was going to say. Weren't they a little weak, and should they not have been faster earlier?
Well, again, you can always hindsight is 20/20. But I guess I'll ignore the faster, earlier type of thing because I just don't know enough about how international diplomacy physically works in terms of how do you pick up the phone call, how do you make resolutions, what do you do. But as to the criticisms of the current sanctions is that they're fairly weak. And that they've identified 15 people that nobody knows about, and said these people can't travel the United States. Ooh, boy, that's going to scare a lot of people. The real question is that the end, or is that the first move in a chess game where you're, you know, this is the first level of sanctions, and another level of sanctions follow, then another level of sanctions follow. There is certainly the argument to be made that it would be better to move slowly and deliberately then move quickly and rashly. Again, I'm one of those people, that, and I know this doesn't please a lot of people in my party, but when it comes to dealing with overseas issues and foreign relations, I'm willing to give the president the benefit of the doubt for at least a brief period. I do believe there is value in us speaking with one voice when it comes to our overseas involvement, especially when they are fast-breaking and quickly developing type of circumstances, which is what we're in right now. I'm perfectly comfortable criticizing what the president has done over the course of the last 5 years because we've had the time to stew over that and see what has happened. I'm not as quick to criticize him over what's happening in the last 48 hours because I recognize the fact that the State Department are professionals at this. And, you know, I'm a former home builder who focuses on budget and financial services issues. So
sure.
I don't try to make myself more important than I am.
All right. Last question. You're traveling all around your district. You're fast and furious around South Carolina this week. What are you hearing from your constituents? What are they most concerned about?
Healthcare. Yeah, healthcare. It's healthcare, jobs, and the economy, and spending, and that's it. Every now and then folks want to talk about immigration, but for the most part it's health care and more specifically the impact of the health care law on the job market. And that's what I'm hearing more about. In fact, interestingly though, I've done 3 town hall meetings in the last 3 days, and every time I ask people to raise their hands if they've actually signed up for the Obamacare exchanges, I ask them, please raise your hand if you signed up for the Obamacare exchange. There's only been one person at those here at those town hall meetings to raise his hand, and it was me. And the only person that I've met so far at these town hall meetings has actually had to sign up for Obamacare. So if you're hearing the level of concern about it now, the level of pushback about it now, when you know there's only one person out of 100 who has signed up for this program, you can imagine what it's going to be like when other folks are actually required to sign up. That's why I think the president has been doing these unilateral extensions. He's afraid to death of what's going to happen when everybody actually has to sign up because the rollout has been so disastrous. And people know that, and people are afraid of that, and that's what I hear most about on the road.
And what has been your experience with signing up?
A complete disaster. In fact, my wife is looking at me right now. She spent no fewer than probably 4 or 5 hours on the phone trying to straighten things out. I tried to sign up on the website. It was a complete disaster. We're still not 100% sure that 2 of our children are covered. There was a snafu on the website that signed up both of my boys with the same name. I was unable. Keep in mind, I have triplets,
right.
So I wonder if the fact they have the same birth date has confused the website or not. You can't fix it on the website. You can't get somebody to help you on the phone. And nobody at Blue Cross Blue Shield even knows about it yet because they haven't got the data from the website. So it is an unmitigated disaster. Even if it did work, even if it was beyond just the website, I know what the cost is. It cost my family about $400 more per month, so almost $5,000 per year, thank you, President Obama. And our deductible went from about $1,500 per person to $6,500 per person. I'll say that again, $1,500 per person
wow.
to $6,500 a person. We've created a system and where we're going to have affordable coverage, where everybody can afford to have coverage, and nobody can afford to use it.
Right.
So we'll be able to afford to go to the hospital. But, hey, they'll have coverage. Isn't that great? So it's hard to exaggerate how bad this program is. And the more people who are exposed to it, the more people will know that. The more people, more businesses that are exposed to that, the more less likely they will be to hire people because they don't want to deal with it. It is an unmitigated disaster.
Well, I think the most interesting thing you said there, Mick, is I know of somebody who had signed up, had the Affordable Care Act, had to go to the hospital. The hospital charged them, had to pay because of this deductible thing. This is the, what shall we say, the unintended consequences of what they've done.
Yeah, and some people think it's intended. You know, I just don't think they cared. They didn't know very, the folks who wrote the law didn't know very much about the healthcare system. They were politicians. They were interested in a political victory, not a substantive or a policy victory. And you're right. And the only hope you have now, by the way, I've made all these arguments before 2012, and we still couldn't beat the gentleman in an election. So you only hope that we don't make the same mistake again. And we hope that we can take enough control of the Senate to try and continue to press the issue before we have to deal with another president in 2016.
Absolutely. Well, Congressman Mick Mulvaney, thank you for taking the time to talk to all of us here at WCRS, and good luck in the race.
And it's always a pleasure. Hope all is well in Greenwood. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.